Good morning. It's a pleasure to welcome back Rebecca Pace, who's a certified public accountant and a personal financial specialist. She's also a certified financial planner. And Rebecca has been in this field for many years. And this morning, what we're going to talk about is an issue that is becoming increasingly important, namely, what happens when your loved ones are faced with what to do with their assets when long-term care is looming in the perhaps immediate or perhaps the not too distant future. Rebecca, thanks so much for being with us this Saturday morning.
Well, thank you. I'm always glad to be here.
Yeah. Rebecca, tell us, what are some of the most common mistakes that either the spouse or the children of someone who is contemplating, you know, the nursing home in their future? What are some of the things that you've seen in your practice?
Well, as a CPA, one of the biggest mistakes that I have seen is when the parents will gift assets or transfer assets to the children.
Stocks or
the house. The house is a big one.
Okay.
They should never do that without getting good legal advice first.
Why is that?
Well, there are a lot of legal issues that surround all of this, so they do need good legal advice. But the tax issues...
Totally
separate from the legal issues. You run into the tax problems. If you're living in your house and it's your own personal residence and you sell that house, there is generally no tax, no income tax or capital gains
on the gain.
On the gain.
Now, this changed a few years back, didn't it?
It did change a few years back. Now, there's a limit on that. It's $250,000 limit, but that's quite a bit of gain we've sheltered.
That's per person, though,
that
right?
That is per person.
So if a husband and wife have been living in a home for 15, 20 years and they paid $100,000 for it and suddenly... you know, the shopping center is built right next to it.
Yes.
And next thing you know, their home is worth, someone offers them $600,000, $100,000, $500,000 gain.
Yes.
There's no tax on that gain.
There is no tax on that gain if it's your personal residence.
Okay.
But if you give that house to your child, it becomes an investment asset to the child.
Aha. Uh-huh.
They take the basis, what you paid for that house, not today's current value. So their basis is $100,000.
Okay, so let's say a common technique that has, you know, one of these kind of do-it-yourself, I know what I'll do. I'll put our adult child's name on this house.
That's right.
So what happens in that situation? Let's take this same $100,000 house. Next thing you know, the shopping center goes in right next to it. There's a Nordstrom's right next to it.
Yes.
And now it's a $600,000 house.
Yes.
So by titling that in your name and putting your child or children's names on it, what's the impact to the children?
Well, the basis is the $100,000. So $500,000 is taxed, a capital gains tax, to the children. So they're going to lose...
the exemption then. Do they have to pay taxes on the $500,000?
They have to pay tax on the $500,000.
How about if you put it jointly, though, half in your name, half in theirs?
Things would get more complicated.
Even more complicated.
Yes, yes. But you are going to lose the tax deduction.
Okay.
Now, the other issue, you definitely want to talk to an attorney about this, because for some government benefits, the house is a protected asset.
Okay.
And the whole exercise of trying to gift that away is going to work against you.
Okay, so it's going to expose the asset then potentially to risk that otherwise wouldn't be there if the house remains in your name.
Absolutely, absolutely.
What about things such as, let's say someone's held shares of publicly traded stock then and they've been buying it for years and years and years. They have like a dividend reinvestment plan and
yes.
they have you know, what looks like a Manhattan phone book full of entries for cost basis.
Yes.
And they say, I'll put this jointly with my kids.
Well, we hope they do have that basis. A lot of times we have a lot of trouble reconstructing that basis. But it's the same issue. If you gift it to the children take the same basis. And if we've had an executive who was with GE, when he bought the stock, it was $3 a share. And it's around $37
yeah,
today.
Yeah.
So if he holds that stock and continues to hold it at his death, it'll get a stepped-up basis.
Meaning that his children will inherit it at that $37 a share and not have to be stuck with his $3
That's
a share.
Right.
But
That's
if he
right.
if he gives it to them while he's still alive, their basis is his basis.
Exactly. Their basis is the $3. So we want to be very careful with any kind of transfer.
Tell us, what are some of the tax angles now also about long-term care insurance? Many people are contemplating diverting some of their assets into either the traditional model for long-term care insurance, in other words, so many dollars a day for 2, 3, 5, or life.
Mm-hmm.
And others are saying, you know, I want to make sure that in case I should take the ultimate estate planning step without visiting a nursing home, if I should pass away before going to a nursing home, that I leave something, that money that I spent on this policy doesn't go for naught. And therefore,
yes.
So there, people are using life insurance policies now, apparently, to kind of pay for nursing homes. Many of these life policies will trigger a stream of income if you should go to a nursing home. What are the tax nuances with regard to these two types of long-term care?
There are several different ways to buy long-term care policies, and more are on the horizon because there's been a lot of legislative action here in the last – there's been three tax bills that have impacted long-term care insurance in the last 2 years, and not all of the new policies have been approved by the state of Ohio yet. But one popular policy was a long-term care policy rider that was coupled with life insurance.
Okay.
These policies have been around for quite a while.
At least 20 years.
Yes. And they're very popular policies. But how those worked is the long-term care insurance was a rider. And
it was sort of incidental then to – it was really more life insurance first and the long-term
yes.
care was the kind of the afterthought.
Yes. And so the life insurance paid out – something like interest or a dividend, and that was used to pay the premium on the long-term care insurance.
Okay.
Now, that little dollar amount that went to pay that premium was taxable income.
Normally, dividends aren't taxable.
That's correct. But in this case, there was a little piece of taxable income that came out of that policy every year.
How about the benefit? Are the benefits that if someone should actually have to file a claim on their long-term care insurance,
no.
How is that treated for income tax purposes?
The benefits are not taxable. So we don't have to worry about that. None of the long-term care benefits are taxable.
Okay.
Now, with the new tax law, that little irritation of this taxable income coming off of this life insurance policy, we don't have that anymore. So it's not taxable.
Okay.
But another thing to remember is if you just buy sort of pay-as-you-go long-term care insurance.
The traditional model, the
traditional
so much a day.
Model, yes, like buying car insurance. That type of premium, you may be able to get a tax deduction for that both on your federal return and there is a state.
What are the conditions that would have under which someone would want to take the deduction, or is it just available for anyone who happens to have a long-term care policy of the old traditional model?
It is available for anyone, but the amount that you can deduct varies with your age. So there's a table, and you'd have to check the table to see how much that you can deduct.
Okay. So it's not the same amount for everyone then?
That's right.
In the last minute or so we have, Rebecca, there's another twist coming around for self-employed people, these so-called medical savings accounts and health savings accounts. What are you hearing about these?
They're not enough.
Oh.
There is a twist that you can use a medical saving. It's called a health savings account, and it's coupled with a high deductible insurance plan. You put that money into the health savings account. It will stay there until you withdraw it. And if you don't need it or if you can let it wait until you're retired, you can withdraw it for your long-term care expenses.
Okay.
But when people have studied those accounts, they just don't have enough time to grow to cover what we expect people are going to be paying for long-term care.
Do you have to have a so-called high deductible plan and be self-employed, or can you just – in other words, what are the employment conditions under which someone would qualify?
Well, I'm most familiar with the high deductible insurance plans with the health savings accounts. The self-employed plans, I am not as familiar with.
Okay. So it's something that if you find yourself without health insurance, though, it's certainly worth a second look.
Absolutely.
Well, Rebecca, I want to thank you so much for stopping by this morning. Rebecca Pace from the Callinan Law Firm.
Thank you.
For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris DeSimeo on The Money.